Hello, this is What the Faux Travel Podcast. This is the last one of series two. It's episode 12, and this one is all about our hometown, England.
Welcome along, guys, to the final episode of Series 2. This is a big moment.
It's emotional.
Like Amy said, we are talking about England. We are not going to forget the rest of the UK. We are going to mention it, but disclaimer now, this is an England-heavy episode.
Absolutely, because that's where we come from. We are English ourselves, lived it all of our lives. So we thought, why not tell people about our own country?
Exactly. The one thing this podcast is missing is us talking about our home country.
Which obviously is something that we know most about.
Yeah, of course. So hopefully we can give you guys some good info.
Yeah, we didn't want to start on a downer, but let's do that. Let's start with a bit of hate mail.
You've got no friends. If you want some, I'll give it you.
This has happened 2 months in a row now. Oh my God.
We'd been going for so long, we didn't have any hate mail. We got one last time, which was resolved. Actually, wasn't that bad. But guys, it's happened. Oh, I feel God. Like this is our first real hate mail, isn't it?
Yeah, we got quite an aggressive, mean email from an American guy called Charles. The subject of the email was keeping stereotypes going, and he was very unhappy with our Romania episode because we mentioned gypsies a fair bit, because, you know, they are quite prevalent in Romanian culture and history. But the reason why we're talking about gypsies is because, Amy, your family are gypsies who came from Romania to England.
Yes, they did. And before you say any more, Nick, I just want to make it very clear in the episode, because we did have a listen back, just, you know, we needed to check it. And I said that, oh yes, my family are from Romania, I'm a gypsy. I was not saying that all Romanians were gypsies. I appreciate everybody comes from different backgrounds. I was just saying that I'm part Romanian and I am a gypsy at the same time. And yes, I did know that gypsies originally come from India. I just wanted to say that. I do understand my own culture. Thank you.
Yeah, the gypsies don't actually, like you said, originally come from Romania. But yeah, we should have made it more clear, I guess. But he was very unhappy. He was really aggressive in his email. He said all sorts of things, really. But the end thing I'll just share with you guys, he said, "You diminish the spirit of adventure and travel into a parochial puke fest of ignorance and British arrogance."
So there we go, guys. That's what you got coming up on this show today.
Strong words. But yeah, like Amy said, yeah, we were not saying all Romanians are gypsies. And we know that Romanians don't like that stereotype. But on the episode, we gave Elena, who was our tour guide, who is Romanian, we gave her the chance to talk about that subject. And she brought up some really good points.
And actually, I just want to say, I'm bloody proud of being a gypsy. I love that that's part of my culture, because I really do believe that that's where, like, in my DNA, that's where I get my wanderlust from. You know, wanting to move from country to country and not staying in one place. I really think that's why I have it in my blood. And I'm really proud of that.
It's only just clicked to me. That's probably why you're such a traveller. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've got wanderlust written on as a tattoo on me. Yeah, I'm probably like another stereotype there of like a girl always having these cliche tattoos, but I don't care because that's me, you know, and I'm happy being me. But yeah, wanderlust comes from the gypsy language, so, you know, I'm proud of it.
There you go, and we're sorry to any Romanians who were offended. Romanians are not gypsies.
Yes, let's move on to better things. So we have plenty of shout outs to give out.
Yeah, so before we get into this episode, let's go through the shout outs. First one, I've just read, and this is actually perfect timing. This is fantastic. And this is real. I haven't set this up, I promise. First shout out goes to Stefan Bokos on Instagram. He got in touch. He said, "Hi guys, big fan of the podcast, especially enjoyed the episode about Romania, where I'm from." This is true. I promise I'm not making this up. He goes on to say, "I think you should mention my mate Nick Thompson," which is fucking weird because that's my name, spelled exactly the same way
as well.
That's
very weird. Maybe you're Romanian as well.
Maybe. He said, "You should mention my mate Nick Thompson." He said, "This guy's insane. He started in London a couple of years ago and he cycled the whole length of Asia and he's now in Australia."
Oh, wow.
That is fucking cool. So we are going to put a link on our social media to this guy's website. The website is cyclingelsewhere.com. But yeah, Stefan, like, that's a great shout. Thanks for mentioning that. And I'm glad that a Romanian likes the show.
You can already see a theme of what's going to happen on this show. Like, just constantly ripping the shit.
What do you think of that, Charles? Okay, We also got a comment on Instagram from Nick Dunn. He put up a picture of a rooftop bar in Marrakesh, and we just commented on it saying, oh, that looks good. And then he replied saying, we are the reason why he was in Marrakesh.
Oh my God, really? Wow.
That is amazing. We said in the last episode how crazy that we can mention a place and then people go to it because we spoke about it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Kendall Husband also got in touch on Instagram. He put up a really cool picture of, he was on a bike ride listening to our podcast, and there's a bit of graffiti on the wall, I think in Toronto where he's from, and the graffiti was someone listening to music. I like to think they're listening to a podcast, but it was a really cool picture of some nice graffiti while he was out listening to our show. Shout out to the Bottomless Pit podcast. They've got a new fan. That's me. I really like their show. They talk about literally anything. That's why it's called the Bottomless Pit. But two guys, really, really good chat. So shout out to those guys. Thanks for getting in touch. And also, fellow Sheffield Wednesday Football Club fan, Andy, he's been in touch lately. He's coming to our faux party, which this is weird. As we record this, the faux party's tomorrow, but by the time you guys hear this, the party's already happened.
Yeah, so thanks for coming if you came.
Thanks for coming, Andy. What a great night it was. I can't believe you did all them shots. You're a crazy motherfucker. But he said he's listened to like every episode to prepare for the party. We're not going to test you. Don't worry about it. But he wanted to give some feedback. He listened to our scams episode. He said, oh, I wish I heard this before. He said he went on a holiday to Turkey, a bit similar to what happened to us in Thailand. When you go on the tours, they take you to all their shops. He just wanted to make people aware that this happens in Turkey as well. And that's it.
Lovely. Well, again, like we say every month, thank you so much for all of the shout outs and emails and Instagram posts and everything that you put up for us, because it really does like drive us. I know I've said it before and I won't bore you, but it really, really does help us with the podcast. And we're looking forward to going traveling soon to get more content for you guys, because if you didn't know already, we're on our way to South America in about a month and a half's time. We're really excited about that. But coming up on today's show, we have so many things. So we're actually going to be playing the Capitals game, even though it's just me and Nick in the studio, because guys, I'm actually going to be tested and I'm scared. I now know what our guests have been put through, and it's not very nice. So we're also going to be explaining what's the difference between Great Britain, the United Kingdom, England, Scotland, Wales, all of that, just explaining what regions are what. We've got game show facts, language lessons with Amy. We're going to be talking about afternoon tea and lots of British things like black cabbies in London. We're going to be explaining Essex, the place where we live. And also Cambridge. There's so many things to talk to you about. We've got lots coming up on the show. But Nick, I'm afraid to say, it's time for the Capitals game.
So this is funny. This is what we normally do to warm up our guests. So Amy, it's to warm you up. This episode, we're going to test your capital city knowledge. I can't believe it's taken 2 years for us to do this.
Yeah, so I'm not explaining it for us, I'm explaining it for you guys. So it's 30 seconds. Nick's going to ask me, well, you're going to give me a series of countries, and I need to give him the capital city of that country.
So, Amy, ready, go. Argentina.
Buenos Aires.
Bangladesh.
Pass.
Tunisia.
Oh, God, pass.
Ukraine.
Oh, my God, Kiev?
Yes. United States of America.
Washington, D.C.
Uruguay.
Oh, Montevideo.
Yes. Russia.
Moscow.
Slovenia.
Pass.
South Korea.
Seoul. Seoul.
Yeah. Spain.
Madrid. I would have got. Oh man, that's quite. The time goes so quick.
Man, the time does go quick. And I'm looking through his list. I'm trying to say it as quick as possible.
So you were like ruffling all the papers.
So you don't lose any seconds. Yeah, Spain was close, but I suppose the timer did go off.
No, the timer went off. It's fine. I missed it. It's fine. You don't need to stick up for me.
Okay, Amy, should we go over the answers?
Yes, please.
So yeah, Argentina, you got that right. Buenos Aires, that's one. Bangladesh.
See, I'm trying to. What does it begin with?
D.
Oh, Damascus.
No.
No. Oh. I mean, D.
Dhaka.
Oh, of course it is. It's in that Alt J song.
Yeah, you do know that one. Tunisia. You said pass. That's Tunis. Okay. Ukraine. Kiev. You got that right. United States of America. Washington, D.C. Yep, you got that right. Did you say D.C.? I'll still give it to you.
I did say D.C. Yeah,
yeah. Fine. Uruguay, you got that right. Montevideo.
Well, I say Montevideo.
Yeah, Montevideo. Yeah. That looks about right. Yeah, you got that right. Russia, Moscow, you got that right. Slovenia, you said you passed on that one, didn't you?
Yeah, because I always get confused with Slovenia and Slovakia.
What do you think it is now? You're not under pressure.
Because Slovakia is Bratislava, but Slovenia is. Ah, and I know I'm going to kick myself.
Okay. Well, Ljubljana. Let's move on.
Ljubljana, okay.
So you got that wrong. South Korea, you got that right. And then Spain, yeah, you would have got it right, but we ran out of time, which means you got 6 right.
That's all right, but it's not very good for someone who runs a travel podcast, is it?
Yeah, but yeah, it's different when the music's playing.
It's the pressure. I just can't explain it. Like, at home, you're probably kicking yourself all the time, but when you're in the studio with the music in front of someone, it's quite nerve-wracking.
And I think, to be fair, you're also running the desk, so you're responsible for, like, the music in the background.
Multitasking, people.
But you got 6, but that is a good, that's kind of average to above average score.
Yeah, I'm not too embarrassed about that. That's all right.
That's good.
Right, so like we said, this is an episode about England, but we also need to explain the sort of relationship, the United Kingdom, what's Great Britain and all of that. So, Nick, tell us what's what.
Okay, now, Amy, if you were to look at our passports, if you saw a British passport, it says United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
Okay, so what that means is the United Kingdom is England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. Okay. Ireland's split into two. You've got Northern Ireland and Republic of Ireland. Republic of Ireland's got nothing to do with the UK or Great Britain. It's just as foreign as France or China, any other country, okay? So the UK, like I said, is England, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland. Great Britain is England, Scotland, Wales, for some reason, forgetting Northern Ireland. So does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. The thing I find really interesting about it is that although we're all kind of part of one country, we're all so different. So, like, Wales is so different to Scotland, which is so different to England. And that is the really interesting thing about it. So, if you come to the UK, don't just come to England and think, oh, I've experienced the UK, because you haven't. They're just so diverse. So, I'd really recommend traveling all of them.
I completely agree. And it's a small country, you know, so it's easy to get around. It's not like Russia, which is like more than half the world. But yeah, but then it's a bit confusing. Like, is England a country or is the UK the country?
Yeah.
I actually don't really know. But in like the Olympics, we compete as Great Britain. But then in the World Cup, like football, we compete as England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales.
Yeah, so it changes for a lot of things.
Yeah, it's a bit confusing. But anyway, hopefully that's cleared it up a bit.
Well, it certainly cleared it up for me, so well done, Nick.
I think I've actually got myself more confused now.
No, I actually think that was quite clear. It's a very confusing subject, but you need to give us some more knowledge now because it's time for Game Show Facts.
Okay. How come every time you come around my London Bridge wanna go down? Birthplace of Shakespeare and the Beatles. England is a European country within the state of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. The population of England is around 50 mil, and the population of the whole UK is around 65 mil. If you're from the UK, then you're known as British. London is the capital city of England, and the population is around 8 million. London is a very multicultural city. 300 different languages are spoken here. That's more than any other city in the world. London is also a major global hub for the finance industry. We have a royal family in the UK, also known as a monarchy. And as we record this right now, Queen Elizabeth II is our queen and head of state. In September 2015, she became Britain's longest reigning monarch ever. At its height in the 18th century, the British Empire covered 20% of the world's surface and contained a quarter of the world's population. Countries ruled by the UK who are now independent include Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Fiji, India, Oman, Iraq, Egypt, Kenya, Uganda, Mauritius, the Maldives, and South Africa. The UK were on the winning side of both world wars. In World War II, the UK, along with allied countries including France, USA, and the Soviet Union, defeated Nazi Germany, Japan, and Italy. The United Kingdom recently named chicken tikka masala as its national dish, which is a spicy curry created in Britain and unheard of in India. We do love Indian food in the UK, or at least our own version. The UK has an annual cheese rolling competition. Every day, the British drink 165 million cups of tea, which is over 20 times the average of an American. It is illegal to import the Scottish dish haggis from the UK into the USA, as the American government have declared that sheep's lungs are unfit for human consumption. Football is a national sport of England, and the world's first and therefore oldest independent football club is Sheffield FC from the English city of Sheffield. The world's oldest professional football club are also English, and they are Notts County from the city of Nottingham.
I cannot believe the one about haggis. That's mental.
Yeah, because it involves sheep's lungs.
So if you don't know what haggis is, or like you've never heard of it, the main ingredients in haggis is sheep's heart, liver and lungs, and stomach. It's got onion in it, oatmeal, suet and spices as well. So it's just kind of like all mashed together. Have you had it?
Yeah, it's actually nice. And yeah, another food that we eat that the rest of the world can't seem to get their head around is black pudding.
Yeah.
Again, it's actually very delicious, but black pudding is pig's blood.
Mm.
Like, we're not famous for our food in the UK. That's why we love Indian food and things like that. But yeah, haggis and black pudding, actually both delicious.
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, a lot of people do come to England and say that they don't really like English food. And I appreciate it's more bland than other foods. But there's two dishes that you do need to eat when you come here. You need a roast dinner, which is like our classic Sunday lunch dinner where you sit down with your family. And you also need to have an English breakfast, which is, well, if it's not good if you're a vegetarian, to be honest, but it's a lot of meat. So you have sausage, bacon, beans, eggs. Black pudding is quite commonly on there as well. So it's all together, and it's something that will set you up for the day. It's not something you want to eat every day because you'll be so unhealthy, but it's good.
I'd go as far as to say that is what we're best at, breakfast. Out of any food in the world, my favourite breakfast is an English breakfast.
Oh, God, yeah, definitely. Because, yeah, let's not go into all the foods, but like for us, like, well, for me personally, eating an Italian breakfast doesn't sound good to me because there's a lot of sugar, you know, cake and tea and...
Yeah,
and coffee in the morning, it's just too much of a sugar overload, where ours is like meat.
Yeah, set you up for the day.
Mm. So we've done Game Show Facts. We have some British inventions, I believe.
So yeah, just really to add on to the facts, British inventions include the steam engine, the telephone, ATM machines, the World Wide Web, which is different from the internet, but I don't quite know how, and the light bulb.
All very useful things. I feel like English people have really helped the world.
Well, the Industrial Revolution started in the UK when we started using like steam engines and things to do the work for us rather than manual labour. So yeah, the whole Industrial Revolution happened in the UK.
Mm. So let's move on to language lessons with Amy. So if you're listening to this, I assume you can speak English because you're understanding what we're saying right now. So I thought we could talk a little bit about Cockney rhyming slang. So for people that don't know what this is, which is quite, I'm quite surprised when I meet a lot of foreigners that have never heard of this. But obviously, just because I've been brought up here, I know what it is. But basically, Cockney rhyming slang is a different language that was made up in the East End of London, and it was made in the 1840s, so a very long time ago, by market traders. And it was kind of like a language that passers-by wouldn't understand them if they spoke to each other. So it's quite clever, actually. This Cockney rhyming slang is like where you put like a bit of a sentence together and then it rhymes with what they're really talking about. So, Nick, can you give me like an example?
Yeah, so if I said to you, Amy, I said, how's your boat? Well, that is actually, it's boat race, and that means your face. So they make it even harder by shortening it. So really, it's boat race, and race rhymes with face. But what they do is they just say, look at your boat. And they're like, what about my boat? No, I'm talking about your face, mate.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Yeah, so... And I just want to make it clear, like, we're not being racist by giving that sort of accent to it, because that's how EastEnders talk. It's like, we're kind of very much like, you all right, mate? Yeah.
You fucking slag.
You fucking slag. It is like that. And it's great. Like, I love meeting a true EastEnder. Like, they're just really cool people. They're like blunt, tell you to your face. They'll tell you what's going on. It's great. But that makes sense. Like the boat face thing. Because if a passerby wouldn't understand that at all, would they, back in the 1840s? But what I thought we'd do is we'd go through a few body parts, but with Cockney rhyming slang. So what do you think plates of meat are?
It's going to rhyme with meat. Chips and... I actually don't know.
What? I thought you'd get this word.
I have no idea. Go on.
Plates of meat, feet.
Oh, sorry, yeah, okay. I thought I'd work in the other way around, but plates of meat, feet. Okay, carry on.
Hampstead Heath.
Your teeth.
Scotch eggs.
Scotch eggs. Dunno.
Legs.
Okay.
Mince pies.
Your eyes.
Chalk farms.
Your arms.
Barnet Fair.
Your hair.
Loaf of bread.
Loaf of bread. I dunno.
People are screaming at you right now, probably.
Head.
There we go. Yeah. Boat race, which we've had.
Face, yeah.
North and south.
North and South. Your mouth.
There we go. That was the last one.
And I would just add, some of the classic ones are Trouble and Strife, which is...
Your wife.
Yeah, and Apples and Pears.
Stairs.
So can you imagine if someone says, oh, you're going up your apples and pears and see your trouble and strife and look at a bloody boat race. You'd be like, okay, what? Is this English?
Yeah, you just wouldn't understand it. My personal favourite is the dog and bone.
The phone.
Yeah, if you're talking on the dog and bone. So then, like you said, when they shorten it, they'll say they're talking on the dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, which just sounds so weird.
It's so strange. So yeah, for people coming over here who are trying to practice their English, they think, you know, because most of the world speak great English and they come here and they hear this kind of unofficial language and they're like, what is that all about? So yeah, it's not an official language, but yeah, a lot of people from London do use it.
Yeah, but don't like stress. If you're coming to London, we don't all talk like that. We talk proper English. It'll be like, even I find it hard to find an East Ender. So yeah, don't worry about that. But we thought we'd show you a bit of Cockney rhyming slang. Oh, on the subject of language, I just wanted to say, I remember this back in my English lessons at school when we was learning about Shakespeare, because like he's a big thing here, isn't he, Shakespeare? We had to do a lot of that at school. But in that time, I found this really funny that, so you're like, you know, nowadays, the most offensive name you can call someone is a c***.
Yeah. Always gets a laugh.
Oh, it's a great word. Back in Shakespearean times, you know what, like, the most offensive thing you could say to someone is?
Yeah, something...
I have told you this before.
Yeah, something strange, like, I don't know, a turnip or something like that.
Yeah, it's...
Oh, is it?
No. Oh. You're close, because it's food. If you call someone an egg, it's, like, really offensive.
So that was a few hundred years ago, wasn't it, Shakespeare times?
Yeah.
So if you call someone an egg, that's the most offensive word back then.
Yeah, literally the worst thing you could have said. I just thought that was quite interesting on the subject of language.
Yeah, it is.
So, like we said, we're going to describe parts of the UK, but really honing in on England. So why not start with the capital city? Let's talk about London. So if you're coming to London, most people are going to know the London Eye, Big Ben, Buckingham Palace and riding on the tube. They're all classic things, which, as much as it's great to get into the real part of the culture, you've got to go do the landmarks, haven't you?
Oh, for sure. Anywhere we go when we're travelling, you always want to hit the tourist hotspots, get your pictures. But then it's what else you can find, you know, the real parts of the country, as well as that, is a real bonus, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So do you have any other recommendations for people, like where to visit in London?
Yeah, so besides all of the landmarks, something that you can do that's really cultural, if you really want to feel English, I would say go to afternoon tea.
Delicious. As you can hear from that jingle, that was me enjoying some afternoon tea. Last time we went to London, we thought, we've got to research this, we've got to check it out. So we spoke to Florentina, who is a manager of Bee Bakery in Covent Garden in London, and we asked her, what exactly is afternoon tea?
So it's an experience, actually. Everybody who is coming in London or in UK, they want to see or to try the afternoon tea, because it's traditional something English, no? So I will speak about the food a little bit. So basically it is a selection of the little cakes and little savory, so sweet and salted delight. Very nice selection of our tea. We have a very nice tea. We serve it in China porcelain, mix and match. We have nice teapots we serve. So it's an experience people want to try.
Nice. And why is it so special? Like, why is English afternoon tea so special? Why do you think it's so popular?
Why it's so popular? Because everyone, as a traveler, if me, I go somewhere, I want to try something traditional. So here in London or in England, traditional, it's the tea and scone and the afternoon tea. So that's why I think it's popular. Yeah.
And that's always such a big thing in England, isn't it? Is it scone or is it scone? That's quite a big debate here.
I don't know. We say scone, so that depends on the accent you use.
Do you get that question a lot when people come in?
Yes. Some people, they don't understand when we say scone, so then you need to correct, say scone.
I would say it's scone, but that's my scone, that's my opinion.
See, I would say scone.
So who knows? Who knows? So how do you make
a proper cup of tea? Because some people make it very differently, don't they? So can you tell us how to make a proper cup of tea?
We do use a very nice selection of teas, Bechmann and Barton, which is a French brand of teas, and people love, love, love our teas. So what is the secret? Boiling water, very, very high temperature, and the tea leaves. So it's proper tea leaves. So we put it in a bubble tea, we say tea bubble, and you need to let it rest a little bit, 3 to 5 minutes to get the proper cup of tea.
Perfect.
Another big debate with tea, that you don't put the milk in first, right?
I saw some people actually putting the milk first in the teacup and then adding the tea. So people,
you should tell them to get out.
So we've got some bone china in front of us, actually. What? Why? That's the sound of a bone china cup. This is the proper way of drinking it as well. Why bone china? Like, does it make it taste different, or?
I think, first of all, you know, when you want to enjoy something, the most important thing is the look. First you look at something, the nice teapot, the nice teacup, and suddenly the taste of everything, and you enjoy it differently. But yes, I think it's making a difference, a teacup, a proper teacup, than a mug. You know, it's very different. Yeah, it's very different.
Okay, final question from me. Where are you from?
Romania.
Okay, what do you think of London? Do you like it?
I like it. I live here since 10 years almost, so wow. I love it. Yes, so I work here since they opened this company 7 years ago.
So if anyone comes to England or to London, how can we find you?
You can find us on our website, so on the BB Bakery, Bridget Bakery. Or l'afternoon tea, because we call l'afternoon tea a little bit of French twist with English twist, so we call l'afternoon tea in London. Okay, on we get many reviews everywhere on TripAdvisor, or on bookings online, on Top Tables bookings, or Open Table bookings. We are everywhere.
You also, at your company, you also do something that's really unique. So you do a bus tour. So if you're coming to London, you want to see all the sights and you want to do afternoon tea, you kind of mix that together, don't you?
Yes. So this is very, very popular, actually. We do have, around 8 buses going around London at this moment with the afternoon tea tours. And it's becoming extremely popular. People love to mix, as you say, the afternoon tea experience and to see a little bit of London. And we do also a tour, or we try to do a tour with sushi bus tour also, or gin lovers, a tour for the gin lovers.
Thanks to Florentina for having a chat with us. I would definitely recommend going on the bus tour, because you can go on a tour around London while eating cakes and drinking tea, and it's great. I've done it with my friend and I would definitely recommend it. Right, let's talk to Russell, who is a black cab driver. Now, when you think about New York, you think of those yellow taxis everywhere. And here, our equivalent is black cabbies. They're a massively vital part of London life, and we couldn't get through London life without our trusty black cabbies. And to become a black cabbie, you have to go through a series of tests, which is called the knowledge. So we asked Russell, what exactly is the knowledge?
The knowledge is knowing all the streets, or most of all the streets in London, and roads, and be able to get from an A to B what somebody asks you, like, you know.
So how long did it take you to pass, and what's the average time, do you reckon?
I think the average time is around about 3 years. I mean, I've passed sort of 20 years ago, so possibly a bit different now, but in my time it was around about the 3 years mark, and I passed in 2 years 9 months.
So you were quite quick then?
Yeah, well, if you look at it like that,
So you're a clever one.
Well, no, it just takes people. People do it differently, you know. Some people are working, some people have, you know, their own job when they're doing the knowledge, so you do it in your spare time, you know, weekends, night times, whatever. So sometimes it's just down to what you can put into it. And hopefully when you go up and you have your exams with when they ask you your questions, hopefully you do well.
What are the exams like? Because we've watched a documentary on it. It looks pretty nerve-wracking.
Yeah, they're not exams as such. As I say, you go into a room, you sit on in a chair in front of the examiner. They ask you A to Bs, or, you know, whatever, like churches or clubs or whatever. And you have to obviously try to think in your head, and you run them as you see them. Do you know what I mean?
Well, you sweating a lot.
Well, you do, yeah. Well, you get some... you get different examiners who are, some are tough, you know what I mean? They have to sort of, as I say, in my time, you had hard ones and a couple of them grumbled at you, but it's to test your skills and how you be under pressure and things like that, you know, so yeah.
And can you tell us, when people are visiting London, why should they get a black cab instead of an Uber?
Well, because we know, you know, more or less, we know A to B's without, you know, just off the top of our heads. So if we're going along and there's whatever there may be, roadworks, like you come out today, Sunday, there'll be crane works up and things like that. As we go along, automatically, we can just swing a left or a right and I'll hopefully get out of it.
So you don't need a sat-nav at all?
To be honest, I have got one here, look.
Oh, you cheat!
No, because what a lot of people now, they give you a lot of postcodes. So I'm not too on me, Poland. Plus, plus, in my case, where I've been doing it 20-odd years or whatever now, some of these new places come up. I've not necessarily been there, and people will give you a postcode for it, so then we can just throw in a postcode, you know? So, and you get all these new name roads and new name streets. There's plenty I don't even know now, the new ones, you know what I mean? So obviously that comes in helpful then, like, you know?
Russell, thank you very much for taking the time to speak to us. I was going to say, these guys are so amazing. They know every single street in London, and, like, the majority actually do. He told us
not Russell.
He told us he took his test a while ago, and then he's saying there's loads of new roads keep coming up. I don't know most of the roads in London, but a lot of the cabbies, honestly, their knowledge is incredible. They do know most of the roads in London, and London is a big city, so it's part of the experience. When you come to London, you should get in a black cab at least once.
Yeah, so I looked this up because we watched a programme on it and it just, like, fascinated me. There's 24,000 streets and roads in London and 50,000 places of interest. So when Russell is saying, you know, oh, there's a few streets I don't know, he's got most of that locked into his head. So he's bloody clever, you know?
Definitely.
I just think it's amazing what they go through. And like I said, we watched a TV programme on it and I can't believe how stressful those tests look. Well done to him.
No, it is very impressive, the tests they have to get through.
So we're sort of sticking to London at the moment. So I just wanted to quickly talk about somewhere we went for a friend's birthday the other day. Just somewhere, if you are coming to London anytime soon, I would definitely recommend going to this bar. So it's called Bally Ballerson, right? And it's a bar filled with loads of balls because it's a ball pit. You know, like those ones you go to when you're younger and you can just sort of jump around and everything. It's so much fun. And the other unique part of the bar as well is they make loads of cocktails that are sweet flavoured. So you can get, like, refreshers or Smarties or Skittle type cocktails. And it's really, really cool. We had a good time there, didn't we?
Really good. And that's in an area of London called Shoreditch, where actually both of our faux parties have been close by. It's a nice area of London. It's quite an up and coming trendy part of London. It's in the east. But yeah, that's really good fun. I find, obviously, a ball pit's for kids, right? But when you combine adults and alcohol, the adults were then behaving worse than what kids would have behaved. Like, in a fun way, it turned into a massive ball fight, didn't it?
Yeah, like as soon as I got in there, I got a ball to the eye.
We had, like, balls all around our face. We were balls deep.
There was too many balls.
Never too many balls. But that just shows there's lots of quirky, different things you can do in London.
And, like, even if you're a foodie, there's weird, quirky, but obviously you'll find everything for a vegan, vegetarians. We've got so many different cuisines here. But also we have weird things, like there's a cereal breakfast bar. So you can just go in there and pick of, like, every cereal in the entire world. And they're just all stacked up a bit like a library, all these boxes in front of you. So that's quite cool. We have a lot of, like, kitten and dog calves here if you're an animal person. There's literally something for everyone in London. I cannot recommend it enough because I know it's my hometown, but, you know, I love it.
Yeah, I think it's one of the best cities in the world. And I love the fact that we live close. We're like a half an hour train journey away, which is perfect. You can get out of the madness. But yeah, it's one of the best cities in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's dive a little bit into history now, because when we was in London the other day, when we met Russell, the black cabbie, and also went for afternoon tea to see Florentina, we also went on a London walking tour. So we were, and quite strangely, we as English people were on a walking tour being taught by a German. And I love the banter that we have with Germans now. Well, most Germans, obviously. We have kind of like this love-hate relationship, and I love it how you can just sort of joke with a German. Because let's go back to stereotypes, shall we? Charles will love it.
We're all about stereotypes on What the Faux Travel Podcast.
But our stereotype of Germans is that they don't have a very good sense of humour, but obviously that's not right. That's not true. I don't really know where that came from, because every German I've met has actually had a really good sense of humour.
I was going to say exactly the same. It's as if they know about this stereotype and they're actively trying to disprove it.
They're like performing for us.
Yeah, but most Germans I've met are very funny.
Yeah. So our German tour guide was called Lars, and he was brilliant, wasn't he? He was like literally a performer. He was really, really good. And part of his tour, he was telling us about Henry VIII, who is massive in our history. You know, he's one of our kings, and he was very famous for having a few wives.
Now, Henry VIII is the son of Henry VII. Duh. Henry VII is the guy that unites the two houses during the War of the Roses. Remember the House of Lancaster, and the House of York? Stark, York, anyway. He unites the two houses into the House of Tudor. Now, and he becomes king of this country. Now, he has two sons, an older son named Arthur and a younger son named Henry. And he says to his boys, listen, boys, we fought this war because one of the reasons the king that died 30 years ago didn't have a son. So, you need to make sure to have a son so that we don't go back to war. I have two sons, I think I've done well. Now, Arthur actually dies before his father, so on the death of Henry VII, Henry VIII becomes king of this country. And he remembers that promise that he made to his father to make a son. Right, maybe he took that a bit too much to heart, you know, over asking parents, because the following story, the story of Henry VIII, includes six wives, two daughters, one son, two state religions, and two executions. So, Henry VIII gets married to a Spanish princess, a woman named Catarina de Aragon, Catherine of Aragon. They're married for almost 20 years, and they're having boys and girls, many of them. And they all die. Oh, yeah. Except a little girl called Mary, later in history known as Bloody Mary. But in the age of 5, you can tell Mary is just fine. Now, after about 2 decades, Henry realizes that the son that he needs isn't coming. Enter Anne Boleyn, a young, beautiful woman just educated in France. So she speaks with a little bit of a French accent, and she makes Henry googly eyes. She says, Henri, do you want a son? I will make you a son. I will make you all the sons, but I will not be your mistress. I want to be your wife. I want to be queen. If you like it, then you should have put a ring on it. Yes. And Henry says, yes, please. You're really attractive. Except, problem, this is still a Catholic country. So Henry needs a divorce. And, you know, do you have any fellow Catholics on the tour today? 1, 2, eh. People in the back like, okay. Not looking at anyone. Okay, let me explain it to all you pagans today, guys. In the Catholic faith, if you get married, you get married until death do you part. No backsies. Yeah, if you break that promise to God, you commit a sin. And if you die committing a sin, your soul doesn't go to heaven. You will burn in hellfire for eternity. And Henry says, yep, that's a problem. So, he asks his favorite Catholic for an exception. He asks the Pope, dear Pope, can I have an exception? The Pope says, of course. Not. You're the King of England, Henry. You're one of the most important Catholics out there. You need to lead by example. And Henry says, you know what, Pope? You have a good point. I am the King of England. You know what? England is no longer part of your stupid club, the Catholic Church. I will make my own church here in England, and I call it the Church of England. Sounds like I made that up on the spot. I didn't. Maybe. Anyway, I am now head of this own church, and I'm still king of this country. So what happens is Henry changes the religion of this country from a Catholic into a Protestant denomination. And he's head of the church. Now, the king of this country needs a divorce from the head of the church. Conversation goes as follows. Henry, can I have a divorce? Of course, Henry. Thanks, Henry. High five to yourself. Henry gives himself a divorce from his first wife, Catherine of Aragon, and gets married to Anne Boleyn instead. Now, despite the promises, she gives birth to a girl. No offense to girls, but that was not the point of this exercise. So, they're again married for about 3 years, and the son isn't coming. So, Henry turns to Anne and says, well, you remember how I changed the religion of this country for you just so that I could have a son? Yeah, remember that? I don't think a divorce would cut it. Speaking of cutting things, I should cut off your head. So, Henry accuses Anne Boleyn of witchcraft, saying she was a witch. She enchanted me to be in love with her, has her taken to the Tower of London on the charges of witchcraft, and 3 days later, executed. Lovely. 2 days after her death, gets married again to a woman named Jane Seymour, who gives birth to a boy. Yay. Once called Edward, the royal baby. Yay, the royal baby. Now, unfortunately, Jane Seymour dies several days after giving birth to Edward. So by this point, Henry has 2 daughters and a son. Gets married again to a woman that he divorces because she was ugly. Horrible man. Anyways, the 5th wife he marries and executes because he accuses her of cheating on him. and that's treason. If you cheat on the king, that's treason, and treason is to be punished by death. Sixth wife that he marries actually does survive him, but again, he doesn't have any children with his last three wives. So he dies in the age of 55 in 1547, leaving behind two daughters and a son. So on his death, male primogeniture, you know how this works, this crown immediately moves to the boy, Edward. Edward rules for 6 years, from the age of 9 till 15, and then drops dead of disease. So that ends the male line of Tudor 6 years after the death of Henry VIII, and that makes this entire story completely pointless. Hey!
So that might be quite a bit of information for you to bring in. So there's a little bit of a rhyme for you to remember so you can impress all your mates with your history knowledge. This is what he did to his wives. Divorced, beheaded, died. Divorced, beheaded, survived. So his last wife outlived him.
Okay, so divorced, beheaded, died. Behorsed? Oh my God. Divorced,
beheaded. I thought this is an easy rhyme, but clearly not.
Divorced, beheaded, survived.
No. The last died. One survived.
Divorced, beheaded, died. Divorced, beheaded, survived.
There we go. We got there at the end.
So that's his six wives. Okay. But yeah, you heard Lars in action. He was a really good speaker in front of everyone. He knows his British history really well. Really good tour guide. We would recommend him. We spoke to him afterwards and we asked him where you guys can get in touch with him or how you can get in touch with him if you ever come to London and you want a decent tour guide.
There's two things. There's either on Facebook, it's Lars, Hendrik. So it's Lars space Hendrik. Lars space Hendrik. So at me on Facebook, it's the profile picture is me in a red polo shirt, pointing, smiling. So send me a message on Facebook or have an email address you can send me an email at. It's tourwithlars@tuta.io, which is tuta.io. So drop me an email there. Yeah, get in touch. Looking forward to meet you.
Guys, it's now time for our game.
Yeah, so we are going to both take part in a little online quiz to find out what percentage posh are we. Now, like I said earlier, we live in a country with a royal family. So a lot of people, you know, look up to the royal family. And I wouldn't say it's an obsession, but a lot of people like to think of themselves as a certain class or how posh people are, you know, to aspire to be like the royals. Like in any country, there are posh people and there are not posh people. That's the way the world works. So in England, we're quite fond of that sort of thing. So I thought it'd be quite fun to find out how posh me and Amy are, okay?
Obviously, I'm like super posh.
Now, if we score 25% or less posh, then what's going to happen? We're going to hear a little sound clip of someone from like British culture that's going to represent who we are.
Okay.
Okay. So if you're 25% or less posh, then you get this.
Please, sir, I want some more.
If we're 26% to 50% posh, then we are this one here.
Sophistication! Don't talk to me about sophistication, love. I've been to Leeds.
So if you're 51% to 75% posh, then you are this lady here.
If your child come home to you and say, my best friend, Chardonnay, would like to come round for supper.
Oh, that wouldn't happen because I'd have shortcutted that out a long time before. We don't achieve best friend status with Chardonnay.
But you can't later.
Someone
on,
named after
later
wine is not coming through our home, are they now, Philip?
So this is a woman who is quite famous in the last couple of years of things that she said. She's kind of known for being a snob. That's not a slob. A snob.
Like kind of a posh wannabe. She's made a career out of just being a bitch, to be honest, hasn't she?
Yeah,
Katie Hopkins.
That yeah, that's Katie Hopkins. So that's enough fame on What the Foe for her. Let's move on.
And if you are the top poshness, then
stop right there. It's ghastly. Unless you have a family tiara, you don't wear one.
Anyway, let's find out how posh we are.
Okay, so the first question is, where did you grow up? So it just lists a load of places in the UK. So, you know, a small town in England, Edinburgh, Wales, somewhere in Scotland, the Midlands, a city down south, all of those. So the one that I would go with is the English countryside.
Yeah, you were from a really small village in the middle of nowhere. Mine would be a small town in England. Okay, next question. What type of school did you go to? So I went to, I suppose, what's known as the lowest when it comes to class or poshness or whatever. I went to a state comprehensive, basically a free school.
No, I'd say Academy is lower than that, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, they're the schools that are in trouble.
They're the scum. No, I'm joking, I'm joking.
So I'd say State Comprehensive.
So mine kind of fits two answers here because I went to a private school, but also I went to a boarding school. It's kind of two in one. I don't know what one I should go for.
You want to go for the one which you think's poshest. I'd say out of them two, private school's the poshest.
Yeah. I feel like boarding school, but I'll go with private.
But it was a private school. Basically, a private school is, yeah, one that your parents pay for.
Yeah. Okay?
The government don't pay for it.
Okay, third question. What's your supermarket of choice? This is kind of like a class thing in England. You know, if someone... I don't know whether it's like that in other countries, but if you say what supermarket you shop at, it really says a lot about you.
It does, yeah. It's a big thing. We don't really talk about that much, but it is a big thing. Yeah,
it's
you're
like
right.
An unwritten rule, isn't it? So some of the answers that you can have is Tesco's, Sainsbury's, Asda, Waitrose, Lidl, Aldi, Morrison's, Co-op, Marks and Spencer's, Whole Foods and Iceland. So if you're not from the UK, you're not going to know these. But I guess we'll just sort of explain our answers. I'd say my family, we come from a Tesco's home, which actually I would say is kind of mid. It's that, not yeah. The highest, it's not the lowest, it's kind of in the middle.
That's mid-range. Mm. That's my answer as well. Yeah, we used to go to Tesco's as a family. I used to work at Tesco, so I really was a Tesco person. We actually now, because we're saying for travelling, me and Amy go to, is it Aldi or Lidl? I always get confused between the two.
We go to Aldi, well, yeah.
Both Aldi and Lidl are very cheap. But yeah, we've always normally gone to Tesco's, so that's my answer.
Well, I think Aldi's big in Europe as well, so a lot of our listeners will know that.
Okay, next question. Does your family home have a spare room? A spare bedroom? Yes, mine did.
Yeah, mine did as well.
About six. which wing do you want to sleep on tonight? The West Wing?
What about the servants' quarter? No, I'm joking. I didn't live in a house like that. Right, next question is, does it have a swimming pool or a tennis court?
So what's your answer?
No.
No, it didn't, did it?
No, it didn't have a swimming pool, no.
Or a tennis court.
No, oh no, no. But we had like a spa in the back.
You did have, yeah, like a jacuzzi.
We had like a jacuzzi and a sauna and stuff. And because I remember when my parents were deciding to get that, it was either going to be like, should we have a swimming pool? Or, I sound like such a dick. A swimming pool or like a spa.
And you had a trampoline as well.
And we chose, yeah, but a lot of kids, I remember a lot of my friends had that when they were younger.
We weren't allowed one. We had to pay for food instead. I think you should have the swimming pool. You can't have a tennis court, obviously, because you didn't have one. Go swimming pool for you, and okay. I'll go for nope, neither.
Okay.
Next question. Have you ever worn red trousers?
See, now again, let's go back to stereotypes. This is a stereotype for posh people. If you wear chinos, like those sort of smart casual trousers, and if they're a bright... I'm surprised it doesn't say white chinos, because that's a very big thing for posh people.
Yeah, I actually did,
you did
have some red chinos once.
Yeah.
So the options are loads of times, maybe once or twice, or hell no. So maybe once or twice. I only ever had one pair.
Yeah.
So,
it's
yes.
A bit different for women, though. It's not really a thing for women. I think I did actually have some red chinos as well, but I only wore them once or twice.
There you go.
Yeah, I'll put maybe once or twice too.
So next question. What are the three main meals of the day? This is interesting because this is a bit of a north-south divide here. People in the south of England say something different than the people in the north. So the options are breakfast, lunch and dinner, breakfast, dinner and tea, breakfast, lunch, tea, or breakfast, lunch and supper. That is quite posh. My answer is breakfast, lunch and dinner, because people sometimes say tea for your dinner, but you drink tea. So for me, it's definitely breakfast, lunch and dinner.
Yeah, because The one that I find weirdest is that people say they eat dinner for their lunch, which is a northern thing, isn't it? And we're from down south.
Yep.
So to eat your dinner at lunchtime just sounds very strange. Anyway, my answer would be breakfast, lunch and dinner. So the same as yours. But at school, when I boarded, so I stayed overnight, dinner time in the evening was called supper.
Ooh.
Yeah. And we ate it in the refectory.
Well, that is like your upbringing. So I feel you should go for that one.
Well, no, because in my family home, we would have said breakfast, lunch and dinner. So I'm going to go with that. That's like my true heart answer.
Okay.
Does your family own an aga?
Do you want to explain what an aga is?
I love this. So this is like an oven that is constantly turned on. Wait. In the kitchen.
You're such a dad. That's a rubbish joke.
That was pretty bad, wasn't it? It just came to my mind. So it's in the kitchen. It's always turned on. So it kind of heats the house as well. So it's like a radiator at the same time. Now, a lot of my friends had them. I lived in like a new build house, but my friends from school, I remember going around there and they had Argas and stuff like that. So, well, I'm going to put no for that. But
yeah, but it is, yeah, it's like an old style traditional house and it is quite a posh thing. But no, I did not have an Arga.
How would you say grass? With a long A, so grass, or with a short A, grass? Okay, so we're Southern, so that's down to, like, yeah, where in England you're from. And I'd say the first one with a long A, grass.
Yep, we say grass, just like we'd say dance rather than dance. We say dance, but yeah, grass, so with a long A, okay? Next question. How many cars does your family have? Options are none, one, two, three, or more. And I suppose the house I grew up in, yeah, well, even though my parents were divorced, my mum had a car, I had a car, and my sister had a car. So that's three or more. And plus, there was always like five of my friends' cars parked on the drive. Do you remember? It was like a car park, that house.
Yours was like the party house where everyone went after the bars and stuff. Yours was the after party house.
It's because Jill was always away. It was great.
Sorry, Jill. Well, actually, I'm not apologising for that because that was you.
Yeah,
same. I think that kind of depends on siblings because I've got two older brothers, so... And then my parents, and we all drove because we lived in the countryside. It's like you can't not drive because you wouldn't be able to leave the house. So we had three or more as well. Okay. How many houses do you have? One, two, three or more. Three or more, including at least one abroad.
Oh, I was laughing actually, but you actually do, or your family, you do have one house abroad. You have a house in Spain, don't you? Well, your dad does.
Yeah.
So this is difficult because both our parents are divorced. So if we're talking about family, how many houses do you have? I mean, we ourselves, we don't own anything.
No, because we just love travel.
Yeah, but we are talking about our upbringing, families. So I guess because my parents are divorced, it's two houses.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so I feel like this is about us, isn't it? It's not about our family. I don't know.
No, the whole thing we've been doing, because we now shop at Aldi or Lidl, but yeah, we didn't say that. And,
true, yeah, okay. So in terms, so have you got your answer?
I've done minus two, so really yours should be three or more, including at least one abroad. How posh is that?
I thought I'd have like not that many posh answers, but I've kind of been going for the posh ones, sorry.
Yeah, because your mum's got a house, your dad's got a house, and he's got one in Spain, so that's three, including one abroad.
Yeah, oh. I feel like I need to apologise, but actually, wait, like... My dad worked his ass off to, like, get his money, so
yeah,
it's fine.
Nothing wrong with that.
What do you call the toilet? Answers are toilet, loo, lavatory, ladies or gents, bathroom, or bog.
Bog.
See, now, if English isn't their first language, they might not understand some of these words. So bog and loo, well, bog's, like, worse, but they're kind of, like, very common words to use, aren't they? I would either use toilet or bathroom. I'd probably use them both equally.
I say toilet. That's my answer.
I'm going to go with toilet as well.
Next question. Do you have a family crest? No.
I wish I did, though. That would be so cool. But unfortunately, I'm going to say no to that. Can you ride a horse? I think we both can, actually, can't we?
Well, we both have, but long forgotten. I think when I was a kid, for some reason, I had like one or two lessons, but I couldn't now.
I reckon, like, if it was a life or death situation, I was trying to run away from someone, I could get on a horse and know what to do.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. I can't remember what the instructions are.
You kick it once or twice, like, with your leg on its side of its stomach, and then you pull on the reins to halt it.
Fine.
You know?
So, yes.
And I know how to, like, canter, like, with my... Like, yeah, I'd say yes.
Okay, but yeah, I have done it before, but no, I can't... The question is, can you ride a horse? And no, I couldn't. Now... Have you ever been skiing, to the races, or to the opera? Yes to all three. I've done two of those, just one. No, none of them. So I have been skiing and I've been to the races, but I haven't been to opera. So I've done two of those things.
And my answer is exactly the same, actually. I've been to, like, ballets, but that's not really opera, no. So two of those.
Okay.
Okay, next question. Which of these would you choose to eat at? Nando's, Pizza Express, Wagamama, Yo Sushi, ZZ, Wetherspoons, Gourmet Burger Kitchen, or Harvester? See, now this is an interesting one because out of all of these, I really, really don't want to come over as a snob, but I wouldn't class any of these as a good restaurant.
Yeah, which one's supposed to be the posh one?
I genuinely cannot see it. I mean, Gourmet Burger Kitchen maybe, but all of these are chain restaurants here. I think Wagamama's maybe slightly higher. I don't know, but maybe that's just because I like Asian food. I mean, out of all of those, I'd pick Wagamama.
Yeah, me too. I'd go for Wagamama just because I love the Asian. So that should be the end of the quiz now.
Yes, I have my answer.
Okay. Amy, would you like to go first? What percentage posh are you?
Okay, it says I am 67% posh.
Whoa, that's good. So that means you are this snobby and this posh.
But we don't achieve best friend status with Chardonnay.
But you can't later.
Someone
on,
named after
later.
Wine is not coming through our home, are they now, Philip?
Oh dear, and what did you get?
Now, there's quite a difference, actually. Oh,
really?
Yeah, even though I've been skiing and everything. I am 39% posh.
Really?
Which,
wow.
It's not the worst one, but that means I've been to Leeds.
Don't talk to me about sophistication, love. I've been to Leeds.
That's so funny because, I don't know, I would say, like, just knowing, I'd say you're, like, at least at 50%.
Well, according to this, not at all. I am well below average.
Ah, well, guys, this quiz is on BuzzFeed, so we would, like all the other quizzes we do on the show, we'd really love you to do it and send us your percentage because then we know what class you are and then we know... Yeah. You know who you really are.
Yeah, and then we know where the show is, you know, on the social scale.
Yeah, who are we appealing to?
Yeah, but send it in. I mean, obviously, it's just a laugh. It's all out of bollocks, to be honest, but it's good fun. So, let's move on.
Charles is going to bloody love this next bit.
Go on.
We're going to talk about stereotypes.
Because we're all about stereotypes.
But you know what? In all seriousness, stereotypes are really interesting, I think. Because of, like, looking at the social scale in terms of they come from somewhere. You know, there must be a bulk amount of people in whatever group that is, whether it's race, age, sex, do you know what I mean? It comes from somewhere. And I find it really interesting talking to non-English people on what they think about English people, right? So we had some couch surfers come to stay with us from Poland, and they were called Veronica and Michal. And they brought up what they thought English people were going to look like, and it was really funny, actually.
There's this stereotype that people here don't have any face features and are bigger.
When you say no facial features, is that what, that we have really small eyes, small nose, small mouth?
It's more that they are not sharp. Like, Europeans have, like, dark brows and long lashes,
yeah, like,
and
cheekbones and things like that. But
It's like when you look at a European person, it's it's easy to remember a face. But when it comes to British people, there it's just red hair and freckles and no brows and like these watery blue eyes that almost are not even blue. I don't. Sorry, I'm very sorry.
See, now, I find that funny. I find stereotypes funny. If you don't take them too seriously, they're an icebreaker. They're a conversation starter. But then the thing is, when you travel, you realise, oh, these stereotypes are not true.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, but it's good fun. And it was interesting to hear from their point of view what they thought English people were going to look like.
Yeah, because she said about the dark brows and sort of strong features. And actually, they didn't say it, but I used to go to uni with two Polish girls. And when I met them, they actually said, oh, Amy, you look quite Polish, actually. And that was coming from two Polish people. So I found that was quite interesting. But yeah, like you said, stereotypes are very interesting things. You shouldn't go wholeheartedly in with them and think that no one can come outside of it. But I didn't think we had to explain that on this show, but clearly we have to explain it for some people.
Well, that's it. Now we've got to be crystal clear about everything.
Yeah, but it's a learning curve. There you go. Like, we take on the feedback. It's all good to hear. But let's talk about Cambridge, another part of the UK. And this is known for being quite a posh area, isn't it?
It is a very, very nice area. Well, famous for the university. We'll hear more about this in a minute, but loads of very famous, intelligent people who have made all these groundbreaking discoveries have come from Cambridge University, and it's a very picturesque, beautiful part of the world.
So we went to Cambridge, and it was all because our friend who we met in India, Casey, she's from America, she came over to London just for a trip, and she ended up staying with us for a few days, and we thought, we know, let's go to somewhere in the UK that we've never been, and we can explore with her. And we thought, why not go to one of the most spoken about places in the UK? Let's go to Cambridge.
And we had a brilliant day, didn't we? We were going on the boats and the punting, and we had a free walking tour with Footprints Tours. And we ended up having a chat with our tour guide, Pauline, who is actually from France, and she's studying anthropology. She was telling us a good story about poor Prince Charles.
Poor Prince Charles, yeah. Basically, he had a bit of a rough time when he decided to study. Originally, he applied in Oxford, the big rival of Cambridge, but he got rejected. And when you apply to go to university in the UK, you can either apply for Cambridge or Oxford, but not both. And if you get rejected, then you're done. You have to go somewhere else. So Prince Charles, clever man, he got his mummy, the Queen, to write him a recommendation letter for Trinity, and that's how he got in. So he came here for 3 years, he studied history, and because obviously he's the future King of England, he's a very important man, he had a bodyguard, which makes sense, and the bodyguard followed him absolutely everywhere, so he attended all the classes with him, all the lectures. So at the end of the course, the university exceptionally allowed him to sit the exams as well. Only fair, because he had attended all the classes.
Yeah.
And what happened? Oh, the bodyguard got a 2-1 and Prince Charles got a 2-2.
So the bodyguard done better than Prince Charles.
He's not a bodyguard anymore.
Yeah, I bet. Can you explain, because some people won't know why Cambridge and Oxford are famous. Can you explain why Cambridge is famous for education and what like scientific and medical discoveries were made here?
Cambridge is famous because it's actually the second oldest university in the English-speaking world, founded in 1209. And over the years, it has accumulated a lot of Nobel Prizes, a lot of famous people came to study here. So, for example, Isaac Newton studied here at Trinity College, and that's where he measured the speed of sound for the first time. A lot of major discoveries were made here as well, like, for example, Francis Crick and James Watson, who discovered the double helix structure of DNA. He also got people like Paul Dirac, the man who discovered the existence of antimatter, and his student, very famous student, Stephen Hawking. Stephen Hawking, who's still very important in Cambridge.
And yeah, apparently you can see him like around town.
You can actually. He's a really cool dude. Yeah, he's a bit.
Have you met him?
I've seen him. He's a bit of a character. Basically, he's always with two nurses, and he's on his wheelchair, obviously, and he likes to go faster than them, and they chase him like that. They run after him quite a lot. So it's always amazing. Funny to see here. Yeah.
And lastly, can you tell us the link between Cambridge and James Bond?
Oh yeah, that's a cool one. Basically, the man who inspired James Bond to Ian Fleming, who was called John Dee, studied at St. John's College. And the reason why he inspired James Bond is that when he spied for Queen Elizabeth I, he would sign by drawing sign his letters by drawing two eyes, so two circles, and put a seven next to them for the seven deadly sins, and that gave 007. And then the Queen would reply, obviously not signing with her real name as well. She would just write an M for Majesty, and that gave M the boss of James Bond.
Very cool. And I've got one more question. So as a French lady living in England, what do you think generally of the UK? Like, you can be honest, do you think it's a nice place? Do you encourage tourists to come here?
Well, is that going to be on French radio as well? Because there are things I can't say.
There might be some French people listening.
Basically, no. I French people, you know, we say we hate the UK, but we actually love it.
Yeah.
So it's when I go back to France, I can't say I love England. But when I'm here, I actually really enjoy it because English people, you know, they're really cool. They have a really good sense of humour.
Yeah.
But of course, well, not on that day, but yeah, no, the weather is rubbish. Come on, the food. How come you guys haven't improved?
Oh, but yeah, I think that's the reason why English people love Indian food, because of all the flavours. Because yeah. English food is traditionally so bland.
I survive on curries.
Thank you, Pauline, for your time, and thank you for a really, really good tour. We have a similar relationship, us Brits, with the French as the Germans, which is a bit strange because when you look through history, we've fought a lot against the Germans, but actually a lot of the times we've been on the same side as the French. But I think it's just because we're neighbours, there's a lot of banter, and if you believe all the banter and the jokes, you'd think we don't get along, where secretly we do get along. But again, it's all, every country's the same really. It was nice to hear her as a French lady say, actually, the UK is pretty good. Like, yeah. I like England.
It's quite funny that she said when she goes home, she can't tell her friends that she likes England.
Yeah, that was funny. But again, very, very good tour, guys. So if you guys are in Cambridge, which I really would recommend, it was such a cool place, then yeah, look for Footprints Tours.
Now, Essex, that is the county that we're from. And we're northeast of London. So to the right side, top side of London. And like I think you said it earlier, it's, for me, it's the perfect place to live because we can be in the countryside and like the sort of calmer side of life, and then half an hour on a train and you're in the centre of hustle and bustle of London.
Exactly. I really like Essex. Yeah, it's like you said, it's got the right amount of leafy suburbness about it. But yeah, we live in Chelmsford, which is a fairly big city in Essex. But I do like Essex. It's best known for a TV programme, which is on TV here in England, maybe around the world, although I'll be surprised. It's called The Only Way is Essex, or TOWIE, as people like to abbreviate it. It's basically about a lot of people who are idiots, have a lot of makeup and have a lot of surgery and, yeah, just not very clever people, although they all seem to have a lot of money somehow. Why do they have money?
They're actually all kind of entrepreneurs. So, you know, they're making money out of new age stuff like social media and presenting and doing stupid things on TV, and they get paid for it, basically. But it's kind of known in England, if you say you're an Essex girl like I am, it almost straight away, and this is something that a lot of, me included, a lot of girls don't like, is that we're known for, you know, we're pretty easy to get into bed, to put it in the most polite way. And we're known for wearing, for some reason, white stilettos and short skirts. But, you know, I've never worn white stilettos in my life.
Plus, I think that's more of like a 90s or a 2000 thing.
Even earlier than that, I think. Yeah. But yeah, that's just what people think of Essex people. But we do have a lot of famous people that come, a lot of really good singers. And obviously, we're going to say this because we live here, but it is a beautiful part of England.
Yeah, I really like it. It's quite an expensive part of England to live. But with that, you get, I suppose, a nice area. But it's very similar to a lot of other counties that surround London. Like Kent or Hertfordshire or Surrey. They're nice places to live. Most people that live here work in London and commute in. But yeah, I think it's a cool part of England. Check it out if you're ever in this area.
Yeah, and one of our famous places in the county is Colchester, which is the oldest town in Britain. And if you've got a name that ends in Chester, like Manchester, then that means that the Romans settled here and it's kind of like a Roman town. So we have a lot of castles and stuff like that. There's a lot of history here. And yeah, definitely a place to come. Just quickly, we do have a couple of claims to fame in terms of businesses as well. So Maldon Salt is a big thing here. So Maldon is a place where you grew up, isn't it?
Yeah, a little town, although it's growing a lot now. It's getting bigger, isn't it? But a little town that I grew up in. And yeah, it's famous around the world for its sea salt. So all the best restaurants in the world use Maldon sea salt. And it got a mention on one of your favourite programmes, Amy.
Yeah, Orange is the New Black. So in the prison kitchen, which is weird because it's expensive salt. So I don't know why they've got it in an American prison. But yeah, you could see it in the background. It got quite a good shot. I wonder if they paid for that, but that's quite interesting. And another one is another place here is called Tiptree, and there's Tiptree jam, which the Queen herself buys and gets it ordered to her house and the Beckhams.
That's right. And a friend of mine, maybe I shouldn't say it is, a friend of mine works at Tiptree Jam. So they often send packages of jam to people's houses. So he's got addresses, like pictures he's taken on his phone. He's got addresses of a lot of famous people's houses.
Let's not name him.
Well, no, exactly. But yeah, a lot of good jam is made in Essex, apparently. I don't know why Essex, but that's the way it is.
But yeah, if you want to know more information, obviously we are probably the people to come to. If you do want to visit Essex, just drop us a message on social media and we'll get back to you. Let's talk about the north-south divide of England.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about this because I've got a lot of experience because we live in the south of England, but I've got a lot of family in the north of England, so I've spent time in both. Both have their pros and cons, and I feel like now I've got to be very careful what I say, otherwise I'm going to get an email from someone.
From Charles.
Yeah, Charles.
But maybe he did this so he got famous on the podcast.
Maybe. He's got more mentions than a lot of our best listeners.
True.
Anyway, I'm just going to tell it as it is, okay, people. Now, the south and more the southeast near London is generally considered a nicer area to live in the country. So you're close to London, so I suppose there's a lot more job opportunities here. Maybe more money, you could say. But then, of course, with that, the cost of buying a house goes way up.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. It's where the money is.
Yeah, but in the north of England, there's more towns where you might think, oh, it looks a bit rough. I'm just telling it as it is. I've spent time in both, okay? But I really like the north of England. It's really, really good if you're a football fan. You've got like Manchester, Liverpool. You've got big football teams all in a small kind of in the northwest corner of the country. There's loads of decent football you can go watch in all different leagues. Even a place like Burnley. I've got a lot of family that live in Burnley, which when you think of Burnley, yeah, it's not the nicest looking town, I'm just being honest, but really friendly people. As in the whole north of England, people are normally quite friendly. There's more of a aura of like community, and they're very, they're very family focused, aren't they? And most people that are born there don't leave because they like being close to their family, which is good.
It's the sort of place that when you go to like your local shop,
you know the name of the person that's behind the till, and you know the when you go down to your pub, the pub landlord will know your usual, you know, your tipple, like we would say on our drinking episode, your drink of choice. And everybody knows everybody.
Yeah. And speaking of pubs, there's lots of good pubs. The beer is cheaper in the north. Most things are cheaper in the north of England. So there's good things about it. I do prefer living in the south. I just feel it's a bit of a nicer area. We've still plenty of things to do. But yeah, the north of England, I do like it. I'm just being very general here. Actually, we'll speak about the Midlands briefly. I actually don't like the Midlands that much. I've been for work a lot, places like Birmingham. Again, there are nice areas of it. But I like the southeast of England. I do like the north. Maybe I haven't spent as much time in the Midlands. But again, there's good and bad parts of all the country, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. And now sort of talking about different ends of the UK, let's talk about Scotland.
Yeah, let's do that. So I go to Scotland fairly regularly for work, actually. So I'm there quite often. And it's a beautiful place. What I will say is Scotland, and we'll talk about Wales in a minute, but Scotland and Wales, they're like the kind of place I'd say, if you like your outdoor activities, walking, hiking, mountains, Scotland, Wales, that's the place to go. Generally, England, maybe more so for kind of history and culture. Not that Scotland and Wales don't have history, but Scotland's very beautiful. It's home to the tallest mountain in the UK, Ben Nevis.
Yes, which we climbed.
We've climbed. And
for some reason,
we've hiked 4 days in the Himalayas. And that mountain in Scotland was the hardest thing I've ever done.
Yeah, physically, it really was. And because you think, with people think with the UK, like you're not going to have any big mountains. But it was really tough. We even had crampons on our shoes and ice picks to get up to the top. I mean, that shows the seriousness of Ben Nevis.
It was hardcore. Glasgow is the capital of Scotland. I'll be honest, like, there's not much to see there. Edinburgh is a very beautiful town in Scotland. So last time I was in Scotland, I spoke to a guy called Stevie from Visit Aberdeenshire. And I asked him, what's the general feel of the relationship between Scottish people and English people?
The recent events that's been going on politically show that I think there's been a shift in attitudes, and that Scottish and English people were getting on much better now. I think we have always had a bit of a friendly rivalry between the two of us, but I think we're all friends, we're all part of the United Kingdom.
That leads me to my next question. So as far as you're concerned, Scots are happy to be part of the UK?
Definitely. Working in the tourism industry, English market is very strong for us. Looking to come up here and experience the home of golf, whiskey, castles, all these different elements. So I think the relationship is very good.
So you mentioned some great Scottish things there, golf, whiskey, castles. So if someone's visiting Scotland, where would you recommend they go?
Aberdeen. Definitely come and visit Aberdeen, Aberdeenshire. We have 55 golf courses. We're the home of Brewdog. We've got whiskey, some amazing foods, some amazing sights as well. Definitely well worth exploring.
I do just want your opinion on one place, because it's a very touristy place, Edinburgh. I've actually never been myself, so is there anything you can say about Edinburgh and what people should do when they go there?
Yeah, Edinburgh is great for that initial Scottish experience. They have the tartan there, the very kind of organised and rehearsed tourism experience. Come up a little bit further north into Aberdeen, and you've got something that's very authentic, perhaps recipes that's been passed down families. So yeah, I think we work together, offer slightly different things, but lots to explore here in Scotland.
Thank you very much, Steve, for your time. And obviously, he's from Visit Aberdeenshire, and you can tell he was really batting for that county. But he is right. Aberdeenshire is a beautiful region, like towards the northeast of Scotland. But yeah, there's lots to do all over Scotland. Like I said, this is an England-heavy episode. We wanted to mention Scotland, but if you guys want to go, then yeah, do your research. It is a cool place. So let's move on to another one of our neighbours, the country of Wales. Okay, now we have been to the capital of Wales, Cardiff, before.
Yeah, we had a day in Cardiff, didn't we?
Yeah, we can't comment much on it. We didn't really see much of it. We were there for, it was a bit random, for some photography competition.
Yeah.
Where you had to take lots of pictures around the city. But
this
anyway,
was years ago, yeah.
I went there once for a big football game in the big stadium, which was really cool. But we recently, a few months ago, went to the north of Wales, which is more scenic, more like mountains and things like that. It is beautiful. And we went to one of the most awesome places in the world, Zip World.
Yes, it's actually so much fun. So obviously it's zip lining, if you didn't gather from the name. One of the zip lines is called Velocity, and it's the fastest zip line in the world. So it's really cool. And it's not a zip line where you're sitting down. It's one where they tie your back up and then tie your legs up. So you're kind of like a bullet just going through the air.
Yeah, like you're laying on your stomach kind of thing. Who would have thought the fastest zip line in the world is in Wales?
And it's so close to us. But we didn't actually do that one. We did Titan, which is one where you sit down and you can go all four people at the same time. So we did it with your mum and your sister and all sort of cruised down together. It was really fun. It was still quite fast. And then also my favourite bit, but the most challenging bit for me, was the caverns.
Yeah, that was really good though, wasn't it?
Yeah, so you're basically in a cave, but ziplining from side to side, from end to end. You have to crawl through. There's like trampolines in the middle of the cave, but like all held up by wires. It's crazy, but it's so much fun. I'd really recommend it.
Really, really good fun. But it just shows there's all sorts of things, yeah, you can do indoors and outdoors in all places in the UK. But while we're in Wales, we got the opportunity to have a chat with one of the locals. And that's obviously a bad, bad joke that all Welsh people either love sheep or just are sheep. But the thing is, again, more stereotypes. Come on, Charles, bring on the emails. Wales is one of them places, a bit like New Zealand, where there's far more sheep than there are people.
Yeah, I was going to say, who has more sheep? Do you know? Is it Wales or New Zealand?
I don't know. I'd maybe say Wales, just because Wales is an older, more established country and more people live there, I think.
No, I'd say New Zealand.
Maybe, but yeah. But the thing is, we're in this little town in the north of Wales, and this wasn't really our fault. The village didn't do the stereotype any good, because one day we went out the front of our like B&B, our guest house, and there were hundreds of sheep walking through the village.
Yeah, the farmer's sort of guiding them with his guide dogs.
So yeah, it's just a big place to farm sheep. But yeah, Wales is beautiful. Cardiff is a big city. There's a lot you can do there. I've heard you can have a very good night out in Cardiff, actually. But yeah, again, we'd recommend you to check out all these places around the UK.
So I've just Googled who has more sheep, Wales or New Zealand. And that there's no like definitive answer for that. But it does say, and this was 2016, December, sheep now outnumber people 3-1 in Wales.
Yeah, that makes sense. But it's again, crazy. When we were driving, mainly through the north, we would drive through all these fields, saw hundreds of sheep. We didn't see a car for like half an hour or so.
Yeah, that's so true.
Which is quite rare in the UK, because for a small island, there's a lot of people and a lot of cars. But yeah, there are a shitload of sheep. But hey, that's cool.
Love it.
We love sheep. So yeah, we're kind of done now with the UK. We don't want to ignore Northern Ireland, because like we said, Northern Ireland is part of the UK. But one day we'll do a show on the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland, and we'll cover it more then. We have been to Northern Ireland once before, haven't we?
Yeah.
But that was just a music festival.
Yeah, and we don't want to give you the wrong information, because we haven't been there, so we can't give you an opinion. But again, more like, I want to push you, please go, because, you know, you can make up your own opinion. But we haven't travelled it extensively at all, so we can't tell you. But we've heard good things. So.
Oh, yeah, and like Dublin's supposed to be cool, where Guinness is made. You can do the Guinness tour. That's in the Republic of Ireland. But I think we'll talk about that maybe in Series 3 or maybe Series 4. Who knows?
Yeah, plus they've got banging accents.
You like an Irish accent?
Oh, I like an Irish accent. Yeah? Yeah.
You work with an Irish girl, don't you?
I do, actually, yeah. And she's going to be at the faux party tomorrow. So I'll show off her accent to everyone.
That's going to be a real treat.
Don't really even know what that means, but there you go. And she's called Dervla, which is a really Irish name. I'd never, ever heard it before. But it's really strange, actually, that I've met her in the last few weeks because of work. But I can't believe how... She's from Dublin. So that's the Republic of Ireland. So they're the ones that are, like you said earlier, they're almost similar to Spain and France. They're that like foreign to us.
Yeah,
they're not within the euro. Yeah, they're not within our country. But I'm really surprised of how different our cultures are. And it's really blown me away the last few weeks, actually.
Yeah, no, Ireland is quite a unique, different place. Very traditional when it comes to like religion or old myths and legends of like, I know, again, stereotypical leprechauns, things like that, but very mythical, quite an interesting place. And we will explore it one day.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So, Nick, we're coming to the end. We're coming to the end of Series 12.
Oh, wow. Well,
series 2.
Episode 12, but Series 2. We're at the end.
But we need to let's rate England, not the UK, because we can't be fair with that. What would you rate England out of 10?
Is that as a tourist destination or somewhere to live? Or everywhere?
As a tourist destination.
Yeah, we always do as a tourist destination. Yeah. Obviously, it's difficult because we're not tourists. I do think it is quite expensive as a tourist, especially if you're in London, like getting accommodation. Holy shit.
Oh, yeah.
That's why probably best just to couch surf, something like that. But I do like it. If you're a history buff, man, like, this is the place to come. Like, especially a lot of places in Europe. But out of 10, I don't want to just be a dick and say 10, but no.
I'm gonna.
9? Oh, no, 8. 8, yeah.
Okay, I'm actually going to give it a 10 out of 10. I know it's expensive, but if you want good stuff, you've got to pay for it.
You get what you pay for. Are you really going to go 10 out of 10?
Honestly, I love this country so much. And the big thing that I love about it is that it's so multicultural. You can come here and you could probably meet someone from every other country around the world, especially in London as well. And I'm so proud of that side of our culture.
I'm so glad you said that, because listening to this episode, we're in London and we had a German tour guide, we had a Romanian lady talking about English tea, in Cambridge we had a French tour guide, but that's what I love about London and England.
Absolutely,
so
me too.
I'm very glad you said that, and obviously think back a few episodes ago in the series, we spoke to Ahmad from Syria, and you know, this country's taken him in and he's got fond opinions of this country, which is really nice to hear. So yeah, I'm with you there. Multicultural, you don't really have to leave the country to feel like you've traveled.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's great. So please let us know if you're making your way to England, because we would love to meet you. But yeah, we are so proud of our country, and if you want any more information, please just drop us a line. We're more than happy to help you guys out. But it is the end of series 2 now.
This is a big moment. That's it. We've done it. Like, that's a year of work. 12 episodes. And including all the mini episodes we've squeezed in as well.
It's emotional.
What do you think? Do you think it's improved from series 1?
Oh, well, yeah. Because obviously the more you practice something, you get better at it, don't you?
Yeah.
And hopefully series 3 will be even better.
Well, that's it. Should we say now what's happening with that?
Yes. So, December 2nd, we fly out to Brazil. And we still ourselves are still not sure of what's going to happen. We think we're going to be doing Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay. We're definitely hitting Cuba on our way back home, but we're going for about 7 weeks, so we'll get lots of delicious interviews and culture and everything to set your wanderlust off on fire.
Exactly, there should be a lot to talk about there, but not just South America. We're also talking about the possibility maybe next year of maybe a trip to Amsterdam. We've even spoken about Egypt. I don't know if it's going to happen, but, you know, we spoke about it. Portugal is a place we still want to go to.
Mexico.
Oh, yeah, Mexico, because, yeah, we will be going back to Central and South America at some point. So there is lots to come. I feel like this series has ended just at the right time. Like, with all our travels we've done this year, we're now going to go travelling soon, get a load more material, and there's a lot to look forward to.
Oh, it's so exciting. So, guys, honestly, thank you for listening, all of your support. Please don't forget that you can get your faux t-shirts and everything online on our website, whatthefauxtravelpodcast.com. And like I said before, hit us up on Instagram, Facebook or Twitter if you want to know any more information.
Like Amy said, thank you for the support. You guys keep us going. It's been emotional. We're going to be back soon. Please feel free to get in touch with the show. You can do that by checking out our website, www.whatthefauxtravelpodcast.com. From that, you can find all of our social media channels. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Our email address is whatthefauxpodcast@gmail.com.